If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Well, hello, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies. And today we are going to talk about film festivals, of which there are many.
So many film festivals.
Barely a week goes by.
The thing is, you'll start by making a joke. So you'll say something like, oh, yeah, the Burbank Film Fest. Oh, there's a Burbank Film Festival. And then you go, also, yeah, right. Like, there's a North Hollywood film. There's a North Hollywood Film Fest.
There's
a Costco Film Festival. Yeah. I swear, for anything.
But the thing is that there are tons of movies looking for an audience, looking for a place to be seen. Mm. I read a statistic last year. I think I'm remembering this correctly. I can't believe it, but I think I read this, that the Sundance Film Festival had something like 10,000 submissions.
I remember that number. It was 10,000. Do you remember they explained the drawer system that they use? They have a tall thing of drawers, and the top is all of the movies, and then if people watch them and like them, they move them down. Hmm. So you go from 10,000 to maybe 5,000 to maybe 2,000 to maybe, 1,000.
So think about the odds here. Think about the odds. 10,000 of these films have been made. Now, they have to be in fairly finished form to be submitted.
Yeah.
They'll submit them sometimes without the final score
or without
some of the visual effects finished, because they know that the people watching them understand that.
Yeah.
But essentially, they have been financed and written
and
directed.
They exist as films.
And made and exist
they,
as
they
films.
They exist as films.
And in a viewable form.
Yeah.
Of those 10,000, I think maybe 40 to 50 get chosen,
yeah,
something like that.
And then you've also got shorts.
Right,
I mean,
yeah. I'm not even counting short subjects and some of the other, sidebar stuff. Not to dismiss shorts at all. But I'm talking about feature-length films now.
Yeah.
And of those, only a handful get distribution after the festival.
Yeah.
So, boy, you've got to really love what you do. You've got to really believe in what you do to set out on that course to make films. It gives me renewed respect always for the people who have the passion and are willing to endure all of that.
And one of the amazing things about film festivals is that camaraderie. And you got to love it that everybody sort of gets together and looks at each other and says, okay, we're all going to be exhausted. We're competing, but at the same time, we've all been through the same thing. You have everybody commiserating over whose houses they had to use to get some final shots in.
Right.
And you know, it is inspiring. It's an inspiring thing when you
it
hear
is.
People talk about just how much went into everything. And I know for me, I mean, so many of my friends are filmmakers of some kind, whether they write or they direct or they produce. And I've helped out on so many sets over the years. And everybody just kind of comes together. So it's a beautiful, chaotic thing.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, it is. And as I say, you got to care. You got to do it for love.
Yeah.
You got to do it for love. Very few people end up making any profit, let alone hitting, catching that brass ring.
Yeah.
And making serious money. It can happen.
Yeah.
It does happen. Those are the ones you read about the bidding wars at Sundance.
Oh, my goodness. Well, and Sundance is funny in particular because people will come home and there will be like 20 films maybe that have gotten buzz because everybody loves lists. So there'll be 20 films that have gotten buzz. And again, all of this is just, it's just weeding things out. So 20 films may have gotten buzz. 20 films may have been picked up. Of those 20, how many are you going to see in the next month, 2 months, 3 months? How many are going to take a year or more to come out?
Right.
It's just wild. The whole thing's wild.
Right.
And in speaking to, whether you're talking to people who are buyers, who know what they're there for, or you're talking to the filmmakers who in some cases have been through this process many times, but in other cases are sort of in the whirlwind for the first time, And it's the whole thing.
What's interesting is no two are alike.
No
two festivals are exactly the same.
No.
There's some that are kind of good opportunities for a town, a mid-sized town or city, to have an event that brings people together, that gets the local merchants involved as sponsors, that gets local fat cats involved as deep-pocketed sponsors to help put on parties and events. That brings and the people who are arts minded, you know, who really are culturally involved and engaged. So that's one kind of festival. Then there's the marketplace festival, like Sundance, which is
and Toronto
and Toronto, which is huge, absolutely huge. And now to a lesser degree, South by Southwest, which
only brought the film part of it on relatively recently.
Yep.
It's only in the last few years that they started really doing film because—
And that's in Austin, Texas.
Yeah. Initially, you know, they had a few. They'd have a film or two because you have all these folks together. Inevitably, someone has a film.
Mm-hmm.
You have all these music folks. They started to do their interactive, which is all these it's basically you can watch the different groups come in, and I've always enjoyed that about going to South By. Is you first get in the nerds who are there to learn about the various programs that are being invented, all of the different gadgets and apps, and that's one thing. And then you get in the music people. Mind you, the one thing that is true for everyone is everyone's wearing Converse. That's the only thing that I've been able to identify. Everyone's wearing Converse and usually some form of skinny jean. And then you have the interactive folks come in wearing clever shirts. Then the music people come in wearing plaid. And now with film, you get they look a bit like the interactive kids because they've got the clever shirt, but then they've also got the jacket with the elbow pads. I realize this sounds ridiculous, but when you're sitting there and watching it happen before you, it is pretty funny. You're like, I will take bets.
And then there's the most recent one that we've attended and participated in, which is unlike any other, and that's the Turner Classic Movies. TCM.
TCM Classic Film Fest.
Film Festival. It's redundant when you say Turner Classic Movies Classic Film Festival.
Yes. Though, at this point, they sort of just go by TCMFF.
Yes.
TCMFF.
And this is an amazing event. It's in its eighth year, and it is absolutely astonishing. It takes place in the heart of Hollywood, which is to say a ring of famous locations. Their headquarters are in the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel.
Home to the very first Oscars.
That's right. The Blossom Room, their ballroom, was the site of the first Academy Awards banquet. It was done as a banquet back then, and Douglas Fairbanks was the president. And so that's given the Blossom Room a lifetime credential as a historic site, which it is.
It is.
And the hotel itself is historic.
And honestly, they've done a lot to really keep it up, so it's beautiful. Yeah. You walk in, and it's the perfect place for something like TCM because it has that old Hollywood feel.
So they turned that ballroom into what they call Club TCM.
Club
and it's kind of the headquarters. So that's a nice spot, and they have panels there and interviews there and different kind of event, book signings and such. Breakfasts and such. Okay, so people are there. Then they cross directly over Hollywood Boulevard to Grauman's Chinese Theater, which is now the TCL Chinese Theater.
We will never call it that.
But we call it Grauman's.
It will always be Grauman's
after
for us.
Sid Grauman, who ran it, invented it, and came up with the idea of those hand and footprints, which we love so much.
For anyone who's been there and doesn't realize that there's a man named Sid Grauman, when you're looking at the hand and footprints and it says, to Sid, dear Sid, it's not just a made-up Sid.
No, it's a real Sid.
Every time I have friends visiting from out of town and I take them there, they go, what is this Sid person? Well, he's the reason that this
That's
is here.
Right. And the folks at TCL and IMAX completely gutted and retrofitted the theater several years ago to turn it into an IMAX theater and did a fantastic job of maintaining the look. Not just that they maintain the exterior, which has all the facade.
The grandeur.
The facade that we all know and that you've seen in movies and the forecourt with the hand and footprints. But the interior still looks like the Chinese theater, even though it's now huge.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous how big it is. And then attached to that is what we lovingly call the Chinette, which is six theaters.
It's a sixplex that's in an adjacent mall, which is called Hollywood and Highland.
Then down the street.
And down the street you have
the Egyptian.
You have Grauman's Egyptian Theater, which was built earlier than the Chinese and which has just been lovingly restored. And
they're so proud of their new carpet. They are so proud of that new carpet.
Yeah, they are. And they found people who were able to get the original pigments to restore the murals on the wall.
Yeah.
In their forecourt. It's really neat.
With the Egyptian, it's the outside because it's meant to look Egyptian.
Yeah.
And you can't miss it when you see it.
No, it's very cool.
So
people
I think we're still recovering.
It's
only been a few days since it ended, and we are exhausted.
Yep.
And in part, that's because you have to battle your way down Hollywood Boulevard to get anywhere.
Yes. Amongst a never-ending throng of tourists, God bless them.
And people dressed up like Marilyn Monroe and Superman and Transformers. And,
right.
Oh, man. But then you get into the theater. And suddenly you're surrounded by like-minded cinephiles.
Oh, gosh.
Who are so excited to be there.
I've never seen such enthusiasm ever at any other event. I mean, we go to film festivals and people are happy to be there. But this takes it to another level. The people who come in, and they come from all 50 states and beyond.
And beyond, yeah.
Just to come in, and it was my fellow author, Carrie Beecham, who named it and nailed it the first year. She said, it's movie buff camp.
Oh, that's funny.
And that's exactly what it is. People go to rock and roll camp or baseball camp, baseball fantasy camp, that kind of thing. This is movie buff fantasy camp.
It is. And the thing is, everybody has a story mm-hmm. about why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll come and they'll tell you. They're really excited to tell you, my husband did this for our anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
I got this as a birthday gift because it's a trek. And you're staying in the middle of Hollywood.
And it's not inexpensive to get the tickets and to stay at the hotel.
So that means that they make the most of every event, every moment. And it's just, it's thrilling. And especially our dear friends who are the ones that get all of the projectors looking just so.
Oh, yeah.
And our screens, our friends at Boston Light and Sound, Chapin Cutler and everybody with that group. They do a phenomenal job, including setting up Cinerama.
Yes, we also were able to use the Cinerama Dome, the wonderful theater, the Geodesic Dome Theater on Sunset Boulevard.
Looks like a golf ball.
And I was proud to be the one chosen to introduce a showing of This Is Cinerama. And This Is Cinerama was a revolutionary presentation in 1952, and it was the biggest box office hit of 1952. I mean, it was a big sensation. And it opens on a small screen with Lowell Thomas, the famous newscaster and commentator, as your host, talking about the history of moving images from the caveman drawings to the
horse.
Right. Edward Muybridge's famous pictures of the horse that showed that all four legs were in the air to other experiments with magic lantern slides.
Yeah.
And then finally, film. And he shows some examples of silent film and mentions that we all know sound film. We all know television now. It's the early 50s as he's saying this. But now you're going to see something that's a combination of all the media. And as he says, he does a good pitch because he was one of the co-owners of Cinerama, just incidentally. He says that this is, and when he says this is Cinerama, the giant curtains on the huge curved Cinerama Dome screen part. And as they part, not only do you see suddenly this super wide image of a roller coaster, but you hear the ambient sounds from all directions, from the seven microphones they use.
And to this day, every time I see it, I feel like I'm going to throw up because you are on a roller coaster. And it doesn't matter. I mean, the incredible thing about it is even though in some cases it doesn't look as perfect as it used to because the three different reels have aged differently.
Yeah.
But my God, they start going down and it is just and yes, the sound is a huge part of it because as they're screaming, it's moving through the theater like it would be doing in real life. And the whole thing is just exciting and fun. And you've gotten – is this the third time they've done Cinerama? I'm trying to remember.
They've done it several times. Last year they did Scent of Mystery in Smell-O-Vision, which was pretty cool. And
there was the one that was the couples trading places.
Yes, that's Cinerama Holiday.
There you go, yes.
That includes my other favorite scene, maybe as much as the roller coaster, which is a bobsled ride.
Oh, the bobsled ride's so good.
And man, is that effective. And again, especially with the, they mounted 7 microphones on this bobsled. So you're not, again, you're not just getting the look.
You're getting the screaming and the whooshing.
Right. Now, whether this impresses children of the GoPro age, I don't know. I will admit that most of the people who come to the Cinerama showings are mature.
But you know what?
But
I'll tell you something. TCM, it warms my heart. There are quite a few younger folks there.
This year, it struck me more than ever how many young people were there. And I was so encouraged by that. And I talked to a great number of them. And it's wonderful. People tend to think of TCM as kind of, you know, an old person's
classic to people.
Network.
Classic equals old.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't.
No.
And being at the festival, you know, it's a wonderful thing to meet all these other people, these young people who are so excited, and they're seeing everything the right way.
Yep.
With the best possible audience projected perfectly with beautiful prints, everything about it.
Yeah.
And it does. It brings us joy to see younger people because we're the ones who have to keep it alive.
And then the newest addition this year was at the Egyptian Theater. The Egyptian has recently retrofitted its projection booth and gotten the fire department's okay to show nitrate film, highly flammable, volatile nitrate film. And if you've never seen, and most people haven't, a nitrate film projected on a screen, it doesn't look like anything else you've seen.
Mm-mm.
People who went to see Laura, which is a black and white film from the 40s, a classic black and white film from the 40s, came out just dizzy with wonder at the shimmer and sheen of that image.
Tell them the story.
Which one?
About the colors making people sick.
Oh, well, when they shot Lady in the Dark, I didn't get to see the print, unfortunately. UCLA Film Archive loaned their nitrate print of the Technicolor film Lady in the Dark with Ginger Rogers. Nobody's idea of a great movie. But the Technicolor is pretty spectacular. It's one of the most garish movies ever made. And the colors on the set apparently were so intense on that soundstage that people had to leave. They had to periodically get out of that confined environment.
I just love that. I just love that. I love it.
You know, people can go snowblind. This is kind of like the Technicolor version of being snowblind.
If I had to die some way, I think color would be all right with me. This is the end.
And the surprise unannounced guest to introduce the opening night of Nitrate at the Egyptian was none other than Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
Who is, and I'm
He's
sorry.
He's all right, I guess.
I'm so sorry I missed him and didn't get to hear him because he is the most enchanting, extemporaneous speaker about classic film. Nobody introduces movies as eloquently as he does.
I think you're all right.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you. But
I hear you talk all the time, and I still think you're good at it.
Well, that's darn nice of you, hon. But Scorsese is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But
it's
interesting people all weekend long.
It's passion with everything, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Everybody involved with TCM is so passionate. Part of it is, so the TCM itself is based out of Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is they schlep everybody from there to here. So they don't even know the air. And now they do because it's been some years. But everything about this is
various
new.
Staff members who do programming and other functions for the network are the ones who are hosting and introducing and helping to actually run the festival. And God bless them all.
Yeah. I will say my favorite moment, and it can never be topped because it's my favorite film. I've talked about it before, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. I got to watch Seven Brides for Seven Brothers on a big screen, which I've done before. But my dad interviewed Jane Powell beforehand, who's the leading lady, and I got to meet her, and she is as gorgeous as she is delightful, and I plotzed, and I love her. And then I got to see it in a big screen with an audience that was trying not to sing along as much as I was trying not to sing along, because it's not easy to do. But yeah, very grateful that we get to be a part of that festival. And you got to introduce some neat stuff that you even got to stay for. That's a huge part of it is because he's working.
I only got to stay for 2
street scene
films that I chose, that I was happy to choose this year. Every year they ask me to recommend films that they might want to show. And they got really good 35mm prints of King Vidor's Street Scene from 1931, which is a beautiful movie, just a beautiful film that kind of sneaks up on you emotionally. Shot on one giant set that's supposed to resemble a street, a tenement street in New York City. based on a play, a Pulitzer Prize-winning play by Elmer Rice and directed by King Vidor with Sylvia Sidney in the leading role. Just a wonderful film. And the other one was a film I've always been fond of called The Magic Box in beautiful Technicolor, which stars Robert Donat. Robert Donat is the man who won the Academy Award in 1939. 1939 is often cited as the greatest year of all in Hollywood history, the year of Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz and Wuthering Heights and Young Mr. Lincoln and so many other wonderful films. But he took the Oscar home because he gave such a beautiful performance in Goodbye, Mr. Chips. He's also the star of one of my very favorite, if not my favorite, Hitchcock movie, The 39 Steps.
Mm.
And he has one of the most glorious voices in all of movie history. Well, he stars in The Magic Box as the man who purported to invent the motion picture. He claimed before the Lumières and before Thomas Edison. And this film was made in 1951 as part of the Festival of Britain. You know, England had taken such a battering during World War II. They were still under rationing. They were still living under great deprivation and did through the 50s. But in the early 50s, especially, it was so. So Ronald Neame, budding film producer, was given the task of making a movie for the Festival of Britain to celebrate England. And he got more than 60 noted British actors to do cameo performances in this film. And one of the highlight of the movie, really, is a scene where William Freeze Greene, this would-be inventor, a well-meaning but absent-minded fellow, finally gets it. He gets moving images, and it's the middle of the night. There's nobody there, and he's got to share this with someone. He runs out of his little workshop apartment and finds a bobby, an English bobby on the street corner, and drags him in, insisting that he watch it too, and the bobby's Laurence Olivier. And the two of them give this just beautiful scene, the beautiful performances. And I got to introduce that lovely Technicolor print and watch it with an audience that seemed to really appreciate and enjoy it.
So
that
good.
That's worth all the money in the world.
And then we ended the festival on a high note with one Mr. Harold Lloyd.
Yep.
And my husband had never seen Harold Lloyd before.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about it a little bit, that he got the short end of the stick in a lot of ways because people know Keaton and they know Chaplin, but they don't know Harold Lloyd mm-hmm. as well.
Yes.
And he's just... Well, the way I feel is he's kind of the mix between the two of them, because he almost always is going for a girl in a very sweet way, like Charlie would.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he was an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that he choreographs scenes is a lot like Buster.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I've always viewed him, as just sort of the middle ground of these two people. It's not extreme. 'Cause some people find Charlie Chaplin too sappy.
Mm-hmm.
Some people find him too sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now being introduced to him at a young age as I was, he's perfect. He's perfect for especially a younger person, but also just for people who aren't so, I don't know, cynical.
Yeah.
But I find Harold Lloyd is a really good gateway drug when you're trying to show somebody new things.
I won't use that quote again, but it's good.
Thank you. So you've worked with Sue Lloyd many times now, his granddaughter, who has done a really incredible job of keeping his legacy alive.
She is the keeper of the flame. She was raised by her grandmother and grandfather.
Yeah.
And so she knew them very, very well.
Yeah.
And she has been given the chore, the privilege at the same time of preserving these films and keeping them in the public eye. And she's done a great job of that. And so the closing night film was Speedy, his 1928 comedy, which he shot largely in New York City on location.
Mm-hmm.
And the Alloy Orchestra played they do their own brand of music for silent film.
I don't know how many bands you've seen that use a urine pan. ridiculous, like all these objects to make all the noises you could ever need.
They're the most percussive of percussive orchestras.
Oh, they are fun. They're a lot of fun.
And
this movie, as I say, it's such an easy film to convince somebody to watch because it's just delightful.
Yep.
So you introduced it with Sue, where she made a really interesting announcement that she's just made a deal and Harold Lloyd is going to come back to us in cartoons.
Yep. Some of the folks from Illumination Entertainment.
Which brought you Minions.
are going to be working with her on animating Harold Lloyd.
So she's hoping that a whole new audience will get an opportunity to know him, which is really exciting. Because as with everything, the hope is that if you get people interested, then maybe they'll watch the old stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll have to say, the greatest part for me, my parents didn't stay because they've seen the movie many, many times. But
plus I was tired.
Plus he was tired after a long weekend. but I was sitting between Sue. Sue was on my left and my husband was on my right. And hearing my husband laugh at everything made me smile. And then Sue was laughing at everything and periodically tapping me on the shoulder to tell me about different scenes. I've known her for years now, and she's always very sweet to me. And it was just so funny. She goes, you know, they searched all across America for that dog. And she's just all kinds of wonderful stories. And when the movie ended, and I was just tickled to hear the audience, but especially my husband, knowing that he enjoyed it as much as I hoped he would. I said to Sue, was your grandfather as lovely as I want him to be? Because I feel like every time I see him, he's just the kind of guy you want to run up and hug. She said, he's everything you would hope for and more. And that's the best feeling. And then I said to her, and you were laughing. She goes, well, I still think it's funny.
Yeah.
And that says a lot. And it played so well. And again, beautiful print.
Yep. And another Harold Lloyd film, The Freshman, is going to be the opening night movie at the annual San Francisco Silent Film Festival.
Coming to you in June.
In early June. And if you don't know about it, go online and read about it and then come. It's at the Castro Theater, the wonderful 1920s movie palace. In the Castro District. In the colorful Castro District.
All of the rainbow flags.
Yes.
Home away from home.
Well, never a dull moment there.
Oh, no.
But never a dull moment inside either, because they do such a beautiful job of presenting the silent films.
Yeah.
Each one with a different kind of music score. I mean, they'll have great pianists who come from all over the world. They have several chamber music ensembles. They have orchestras. And the opening night, Freshman is going to be accompanied by the Berklee College of Music Orchestra, which is a relative newcomer to the festival.
Yeah.
And they brought the house down last year with their own original score for E.A. DuPont's great German silent film Variety. And they did such a great job that it was thrilling.
Yeah.
And the film is pretty exciting, too. And so the audience was... Not give, you know, we've all been there for obligatory standing ovation.
Frenzy!
You know, this was like people leapt to their feet to cheer them and to cheer the film as well. So
whenever you can get an opportunity to see a movie on a big screen with an orchestra, with an audience that is excited to be there.
Yeah.
You know, there's just nothing better.
Yep.
So we can't wait for next year.
Yep.
We need to sleep before, but can't wait for next year.
Yeah.
To turn back for a minute.
Yeah,
because,
now here's the
holy
opposite.
Holy moly.
The opposite is we went to the San Luis Obispo film.
Well, hang on. Let's try to go in some kind of order because holy cow.
Well, I just thought there'd be a contrast because it's such a small hometown festival.
It is.
And I don't know. I think the only people who traveled there were filmmakers.
Yeah.
Who came to accompany their films.
From Spain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All kinds.
And they have, fortunately, still extant in that lovely town, which is a college town. Cal Poly is located there, and there are other schools there, too, as well. And so it's a lively place and a fun place and a beautiful spot on the central coast of California.
And the theater is beautiful.
Yes, the Fremont Theater.
Yep.
Now, the Fremont Theater has somehow survived. It's no longer a full-time movie theater. But it has survived.
It has the marquee, which is mostly what we look for.
It has an Art Nouveau-style marquee.
And then you go inside and
a box
cow.
Office kiosk. And then inside
beautiful.
Is, again, beautiful decoration, I guess is the
I
word.
The ceilings are painted. It's just lovely. It's a lovely place to be.
So it's become a performing arts center now, which is what's keeping it alive, which is true of many former movie palaces. But they still have the ability to screen films there.
Yes.
And they do. And we got to see some stuff there. We got to go to the awards ceremony there, which was nice. They even gave me an award, which was very kind of them and totally unnecessary. I was there and happy to be there and didn't have to be rewarded for showing up.
And it was really neat was I actually got to watch a conversation with Josh Brolin, who they were honoring.
Who's a hometown boy.
He's a hometown boy and very proudly so.
Yep.
His dad was there.
Yep.
James Brolin was there, too.
Local rancher and businessman.
Yes, yes. And actually, one of the coolest stories that Josh shared was that at one point he had to sell his ranch. Some years ago, mm-hmm. he wasn't working as much and he couldn't really afford it. He had to sell his ranch. Well, then, pretty recently, he was able to buy it back.
Yeah.
And so talk about a wonderful story to listen to.
Yep.
And Ben Mankiewicz interviewed him, and he was just – he was delightful.
He was. And who showed up to present the award? Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
That ain't bad either.
And they love each other.
Yes.
They just love each other. So that was really neat. But we got to see the movie Score, which is a very cool documentary that you're in.
Yes, Matt Schrader's film.
And it was really – I have to say, Score is – there are so many people who don't know about all of the odds and ends, bits and bobs that go into movie making that, I mean, I know that when most people don't even stay for credits. But if you do, even for a minute, my God, are there a lot of names up there? Well, there's a reason. Everything has to be done by someone. And when it comes to music, much like everything else, there are times when you need to hear the music. There are times when you need to not notice the music at all.
Yep.
There are times when the music has to drive the film. And in this documentary, they interview all kinds of people.
And the other thing that the documentary does, which I think is, I don't like to use the word unique, but I think it is unique, is it takes us inside scoring sessions.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very private property. This is
yes.
something that is not open to not just the public, but to the cameras usually.
Yeah,
you don't get to see what goes on when the orchestra is there, when the conductor is addressing the musicians, when the composer is addressing the musicians.
But every piece is fascinating, every yep. single piece, because in some cases they don't want to conduct themselves because they need to hear it as a whole.
Yeah, they'd rather be in the booth hearing the results.
Hearing what it's going to sound like. And you get to go into Abbey Road, which yep. of course is thrilling. I mean, just all these different bits and bobs. But yeah, yeah. definitely Score. It's called Score.
Yeah,
got to see that.
And then the day before, your mother and I went to see an interesting show.
My mother?
Yeah, yours.
You went with my mother to a movie?
Yeah.
Since when?
It happens.
It happens. Go on.
First, we saw a really good documentary called John G. Avildsen, King of the Underdogs, made by Derek Wayne Johnson. Now, John Avildsen is a guy who's, I think he's 82 now, still going strong, still feisty, which he always was. I first learned his name, I think, way back when he made a movie called Joe, which brought Peter Boyle to prominence. And Joe was a kind of a sleeper in the early 70s. And that got him more work and bigger, offers. Well, John Avildsen made two films that gives him a permanent place in popular culture. This is the man who directed Rocky and The Karate Kid, as well as some sequels. Not all, but some of the sequels.
Yeah.
Now, he's had his ups and downs since then. He's had some flops. He's had some successes.
Who of us hasn't?
Yes. But when you've directed Rocky and The Karate Kid...
you live on forever.
That's right. And he's an interesting man. And they interview Stallone, of course.
Yeah.
They interview Ralph Macchio. They interview other people involved with those films and others, colleagues who've worked with him over the years. And it's a really interesting portrait of the guy and his approach and the impact that those films have had. So that was very enjoyable and very entertaining to watch. And with it was a short that I've got to talk about. It's called Montage, Great Film Composers and the Piano. It was made by a woman named Gloria Cheng, who was herself a talented musician, who's appeared on many soundtracks playing piano. And this is how she came to know the great film composers. She commissioned six major film composers to write a composition for classical piano. And this is something they don't get to do.
Mm.
And they all thought, what a cool idea. So she got John Williams.
Heard of him.
Bruce Broughton, Alexandre Desplat, Don Davis, Michael Giacchino, and Randy Newman to each write an original composition for piano. And the short is so well edited and presented that you don't hear the complete pieces, but you get a sense of each person, how they approach this challenge.
Their methodology.
And you meet the woman who's playing their compositions. And it is absolutely, if you love music and if you love film music in particular. It's mesmerizing. Mm. And again, it's called Montage, Great Film Composers and the Piano. I don't know what its future is beyond the film festival circuit. I hope it will turn up, you know, on VOD.
Somewhere,
and
yeah.
Streamable somewhere.
Yeah.
It's so interesting and so good. And these are the cream.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't get better.
Composers.
It doesn't get better than these folks.
So that was a treat also.
Yeah.
And that was at the little San Luis Obispo Film Festival.
Yep. Mind you, we went from South by Southwest to San Luis Obispo. We had like a half a day in between to come home and shower and then go to San Luis Obispo. So to come from South by,
which enormous.
Is insane. It is just ridiculous. And we got to, for those of you who listened to it, we got to record an episode of the podcast.
Yep.
Which was so much fun.
Which was great fun with Nick Offerman and filmmaker Brett Haley, who were there with their new film called The Hero, starring Sam Elliott.
And anytime you get to see Sam Elliott,
it's worth it.
It's worth it. It's completely worth it.
And I hope that that film will have a life and that it will be seen far beyond that film festival.
So if you like, check out that podcast. That was a really, really neat day for us. But on top of that, you went and saw, how many did you end up seeing? I don't even know. You saw a couple.
I saw a couple of films.
You saw a couple. We say it's all very long.
Saw a couple of films.
Oh, so many people, so many things.
I want to talk about a film I saw there last year.
Yeah.
That did, I know it did get actually a release. Henny Youngman used to have a joke about a film that was so bad it didn't release, it escaped. No, he had a better joke.
I like that one.
He had a better joke. He said, this film was so bad that when they shelved it, the films on the shelf next to it moved over a little bit.
Oh, I like that one.
Thank you, Henny.
I like that one.
Anyway, last year at South by Southwest, I saw a film called The Trust.
Yes.
Directed by two brothers, Alex and Benjamin Brewer. And it stars Nicolas Cage and Elijah Wood. And Jerry Lewis.
Yes, with a cameo.
With a small part for Jerry Lewis as Nicolas Cage's father. Interested? Yeah, I was too.
Yeah.
And the Brewers were there, and Elijah was there, and I stayed for the Q&A afterwards, which was very interesting. It's a heist movie with some humor in it, and I thought it was really good. And I know it did get a release. It's probably now available on iTunes or Amazon or Netflix. And it's worth checking out.
You know, it's one of the difficult and unfortunate things that does happen with going to all these different festivals is that sometimes movies, again, it can take a year or more just depending on who buys them, if they are bought. But other times, we never see them again.
Yeah, I know.
Or you really have to work to find them. So, you know, like with everything,
now,
there's good and bad.
In fairness, I should say that there is also something I call the festival effect. This is just to be, you know, full disclosure here. Sometimes you get enthusiastic at a festival.
Yes.
And knowing that the filmmakers are there or maybe seeing them afterwards or even meeting them beforehand.
Hearing their stories.
It enhances the experience. You're not just watching a movie. You're seeing it in this context. And seen cold, away from all that. The film sometimes doesn't have the same spark. I have to admit that that is sometimes true.
We've all had that happen.
I like to think, though, that The Trust is worth seeing on its own, on its own merits, and that's one that I want to recommend. Just to go back very quickly before we continue on our journey here.
Our backwards journey.
A year and a half ago, I was on the jury at the Savannah Film Festival in Savannah, Georgia, a lovely event. Put on by SCAD, that is the Savannah College of Art and Design, and they do a heck of a job. They put on a really fine festival.
And what's my mom's favorite part of that festival?
The food.
The fried chicken.
Yep. Well, she's no fool. I saw a film there that also did get a very tiny release, but is now available, I'm sure, online that I recommend, called Tumbledown, starring Jason Sudeikis and Rebecca Hall. And a lot of good supporting actors as well. And it was directed and written, or co-written, by Sean Mushaw, who's been around movies for a while but as a PA and a crew member. But this is his directing debut, and it's a really good little film with really, really first-rate performances. And if you see Jason Sudeikis in Colossal, as a lot of people are right now, and are saying, boy, I didn't know he could do that.
He's talented.
Yeah, he's got talented. He's got a lot to give.
Smart guy, and he's very talented. That's also, though, Savannah is where you first saw the film. I've just gone brain dead on the name. The Miles Teller boxing film.
Oh, yes, Bleed for This.
Yeah, and you got to interview all those guys there.
Yep, that was fun.
Yeah.
And that's a film that didn't get a lot of love. And I will say that it's a boxing movie. It's based on a real fellow.
Yep.
A real guy from Providence, Rhode Island, I believe. And he's a character.
Miles Teller does such a great job.
The level of performance in this film.
Yep.
Miles Teller and Aaron Eckhart. And Katie Sagal.
Aaron Eckhart.
Everybody in the film.
Is just a brilliant, brilliant actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he is one of those people. I put him into the same category as Billy Crudup, which is that in part because they're chameleons. Mm-hmm. So they look different a lot.
Yeah.
And in part...
Well, in this film, he
Oh,
really,
well, please, no, it's a whole other thing. In this movie, Aaron, he's transformed.
Yeah.
But you know, so a lot of times you don't even realize it's them, but they're the type of folks, both of those actors, they're the kind that every time you see them, they're good. It doesn't matter what they're doing, doesn't matter how big the part is, how small the part is, they're good. But in this film, Bleed for This, I'll tell you... I like the film in general, but watching him and Miles Teller, yeah. I knocked out completely. I made a joke. Knocked out. See what I did there?
And they're both virtually unrecognizable. Well, Aaron Eckhart is literally unrecognizable.
Yes.
The first minute or two, you go, whoa.
You know him, but you don't know why.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go, oh, my God. It's incredible.
And he's on a ride. He was wonderful in Sully,
mm-hmm.
also as a Tom Hanks co-pilot.
He's always good. He's just an incredibly talented guy.
He's working hard now to choose films he really wants to make.
Yeah.
And doing well at it.
Yeah.
And I wish him only the best because he's a talented guy.
Very.
So these are some of our experiences, but not all.
So many film festivals. Here's what happens. So in January, we begin with this year in particular, we started with the Art House Convergence, mm-hmm. which we've talked about a little bit with you folks. It's an incredible gathering of people. This year was their biggest year, 700.
600. Six or seven.
Let's fight about it.
Yeah.
700 people
sure.
brought together. Sir. not in front of the company. It's many people.
Many.
Came from all across the United States. It's all people who own and run art house theaters. And
what we used to call art house theaters.
Yeah. And the number one thing that they said that everybody kept saying was this get-together meant so much to them because being around other people who do what they do, this is not a lucrative business.
No.
This is a business that is another one you have to have passion, you have to love it. You have to love film, and you have to want to share this with people.
It's a boom or bust business, for a lot of them, it's a week-to-week question of whether it's boom or bust.
And they work so hard. So hearing them all say that coming together really helps boost that morale, I was so thrilled for that. And it's
co-sponsored by the Sundance Institute and takes place just before the Sundance Film Festival.
It ends on Thursday. Well, ends Wednesday night and into Thursday morning, and Thursday afternoon Sundance starts.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of crazy. But then we go over to the Santa Barbara Film Festival.
Yep.
That's our next stop, where you got to interview Denzel Washington, and he was the recipient of the Malton Modern Master Award. And what a delight he was.
He was in great spirits, as he was all through this season, justly proud of what he'd accomplished.
Very.
You know.
Very.
For August Wilson and with August Wilson's great material, you know.
And I had a surreal experience where he decided to hang out with me and my husband in the parking lot behind the theater.
He wanted some fresh air. It was before the show.
It was before the show. And we were back there, so he came back. I looked at my husband. I went, he's coming. Denzel's walking towards us. Why is he coming outside? Why is he standing? And then he's standing there in front of me, and I'm going, must not be awkward in front of Denzel. It was a knockout of a night. We had a great time, and it was a great conversation between the two of you.
Well, what was neat about it was that what we do every year, and I've done this for more than 25 years at the Santa Barbara Festival, is I sit on stage with a guest of some note, And we review their career. And we have clips of their films and chronologically go through their work past to the present. Some are more enthusiastic about doing this than others. Mm. For instance, last year, Johnny Depp, who couldn't have been nicer.
Lovely.
But refused to watch any of the clips. I had read in doing my homework that he never watches himself on screen. Well, that was not only true, it was literal.
Yeah.
So what I did during those clips, while the audience was watching them, and we had a monitor and we could have watched it too, was I just talked to him. Our mics were off. I just kept him engaged in conversation. Small talk.
Yep.
Which he was happy to do.
And he was charming to the audience.
And afterwards, people said to me, what did you and Johnny talk about? I said, nothing.
The weather. his various jewelry adornments, you know, the huge.
Whereas this year, Denzel actually got a kick out of seeing these film clips he had not revisited in years.
Because for a lot of people, I mean, if you think about his career, how many films he's made and how long he's been working, you know, there's a lot there. And many times you don't get the opportunity to revisit something.
So we're showing A Soldier's Story and Glory and films like that from the very beginning of his career. He was having a good time.
And he, you know, the other thing that I enjoyed is he really wanted to entertain the audience.
Yes.
He had them eating out of the palm of his hand.
He sure
did. Wanted it that way. And it was a lot of fun. Always a lot of fun. And this is, mind you, this is all while Oscar season is happening around us.
Yeah.
While the Academy Awards and all the various other award shows. So you've got the Los Angeles Film Critics Awards. You've got leading into the Independent Spirit Awards. You've got the Golden Globe. So there's just a million other things happening. And then what was – so I think the next festival –
I think you and I went to. Your mom and I did go up to the Sonoma Film Festival.
You went to Sonoma, and husband and I went to WonderCon.
That's right.
We both.
We separated that week.
Yes. We decided that we would both go for festivals, but different festivals, and then meet in the middle and talk about it afterwards.
Alice and I had a very nice time at Sonoma. The people couldn't have been nicer or more welcoming. It was kind of lost on us because we're not big wine drinkers.
That's all they kept saying.
What a shame.
Talking to me on the phone, all they kept saying.
A crime, actually.
All they kept saying, my God, they just keep drinking all the wine. I said, yeah, most people go there for that. And you were on the jury.
I was on the jury, which is an unusual jury experience because I agreed to watch 8 feature-length films, American independent films. Some people also did foreign film and short subject and documentary judging. But I had the American Indies, and I watched 8 of them, and I had to watch them all at home before the festival. So I didn't watch very much at the festival.
No.
But I watched 8 independently made films ahead of time, and using computer links, this is the new era, folks. No more do we have to send those bothersome discs known as, you know, DVDs. They send links. And, I mean, if you're watching Lawrence of Arabia, that's not how you want to see it.
Not ideal.
These were mostly small, modest-scale films, so I think they survived that pretty well.
And there were a couple that you were really impressed with.
There were several
with.
That I liked. In fact, on the whole, I'd say they were pretty good.
Yeah.
They were pretty good, and which was encouraging. And because they were low-budget, they were short.
Yeah.
God bless them.
Never a bad thing.
And the film that we wound up agreeing on, the other jurors and I, was called June Falling Down. Not my favorite title, I have to admit. I think it could use a snappier title. But it's really good, and it was written and directed and edited by its leading actress, Rebecca Weaver, who's from Wisconsin, and who was absolutely, to use a British term, gobsmacked when it was announced that she had won. Because she never expected it.
Yeah.
She just made this little film with friends and colleagues. And it's about a young woman whose father has died. And she has gone off for a year to Europe. And her excuse or what she tells people is that she's following her father's travel journey. She's following his path. And that's her way of sort of celebrating him. But when she comes back home, she realizes not only how much she misses of back home, but how much at home she feels in that community where everybody knows her. That's the gist of the movie. It's a pretty simple idea, but it's very well done. And she is really good and very natural.
Hmm.
Naturalistic, I might almost say. And that's true of all the other people in the film with her. You never get a sense of, it's kind of a fly on the wall type of approach to movie making.
Yeah.
Where you just feel like you're there watching these people. You don't feel like people memorize dialogue and are reciting it now in front of the camera. That's a real achievement.
It is.
And to pull that off, we said, yes, she deserves our award. And
Bravo, Miss Weaver.
Indeed, and keep an eye on what she does next and hope that this film has a life beyond just film festivals.
Yeah. Meanwhile, husband and I were in Anaheim, California at what I like to call Baby Comic-Con because WonderCon is, to me, it's the sane version of Comic-Con.
The kinder, gentler.
The kinder, gentler Comic-Con.
Of the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes, it is. It's so much fun, and I love seeing everybody dressed up. I got to see Chewbacca, but he was hot pink. Just hot, gigantic hot pink Chewbacca. I met a guy who had created an Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors, and he was walking around with this fantastic-looking puppet. Just all kinds, everything you can imagine. And I got to spend some time with our dear friend and one of the truly, I think, one of the finest artists in the world, Olivia de Broadnice. She is she's spectacular. You might know her stuff because people knock it off a lot.
Yeah.
It's Cheesecake, which is one of the names they use for it. But basically, she did everything with Betty Page. She worked with Betty Page, but she's also now, she's worked with all of the girls from the Playboy Mansion. Hef hired her many, many, many years ago. But if you look at her painting, she works with Dita Von Teese. And
She's the modern version of Alberto Vargas.
Yes.
And George Petty, the great pinup artist of the 40s and 50s. And she has sort of absorbed their lessons.
Yes.
And become her own person.
Yes. And the thing about her stuff, though, is, again, you see it a lot in postcards. You can even buy the books. But seeing the pieces in person, you know, for people who are so used to everything being created by the computer, to try and explain that this is by hand, that this is her doing this, it just blows you away.
She just uses her first name, Olivia.
Yes, Olivia. And she actually has a new series out that she's done that we will share with you. We'll share more about it soon. But she's done Bride of Frankenstein. She's done Catwoman. All of these. Oh, and she's starting to work on a couple of other. She's working with Gal Gadot to do Superwoman and Wonder Woman and all these. Like, I mean, but everybody you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just.
She's an enormous talent.
The stuff is just. It blows you away. It blows you away to see it in person.
Yep. So we've had, as you can hear, a variety of interesting and wonderful experiences.
Yeah.
And let me say this to you folks about film festivals. One of the things I find is they make me more adventurous as a film as a film goer. I watch films that I wouldn't at home. I'll go to see that, you know, that Bulgarian import that maybe at home I might say, do I really feel like going out tonight? When I'm away and I'm at a film festival, I try things. I will experiment. And that's part of the fun of a film festival.
And you get that excitement. Everybody's so excited about something. If everyone's talking about that Bulgarian film or whatever it may be, you kind of go, well, yeah, all right, let's go. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really great thing to do. We're very excited because one of the films that we discovered last year at Fantastic Fest is now on Netflix universally. It's here as well as in the UK. It's an Irish film called The Young Offenders, and we've told you a little bit about it. I love this movie, and I got to watch it the other day because it's now on Netflix. Got to show husband the movie, and I got to see it again, and you know what? It is just, it's so funny.
It went on to become the biggest box office hit, I think, in Irish history.
It's something like, and it just keeps winning awards. It just keeps winning awards over there. It's directed by a guy called Peter Foote.
Wrote and directed.
Footita, because it's F-O-O-T-T. Footita. And this is another one where I had a similar feeling where I thought, did I really enjoy this movie because we saw it the way we saw it and we got to know the filmmakers and I got to know the producer and got to speak to everybody. And so I fell in love with them as much as I fell in love with the film.
Mm-hmm.
Is the movie that good? In watching it again, It really is. It's just fun. I will tell you that I do know some people who've had to turn on the subtitles, the captions, yes, because it is an Irish film and these guys are really Irish. Yeah. And the accent can be hard to understand for some people.
But it's a wonderful, very irreverent.
Oh, just.
And
it's everything.
Energetic.
It's everything you want in a movie, in someone's first film where they've just poured their heart into it.
Yeah.
And it's a good time.
Yep.
It's a good time. So you can actually go and see that now, The Young Offenders.
Another recommendation. You heard it here.
Yeah.
And we've got much more to say, but we're out of time.
I know. So many more festivals coming up. So many more festivals coming up.
We'll take notes.
You know what's funny is after a while, you actually feel naked without a lanyard. I've had that where sometimes, you know, we go from festival to festival and I'm just not used to being without a lanyard around my neck. I don't even know my own name.
Jesse, it's going to be all right.
Oh, you promise?
You're going to be okay.
Okay.
You're going to be okay.
All right.
Gee, folks, thanks for listening. We so appreciate you being there. Please do tell your friends. Tell anybody. Tell anybody you happen to run
into.
Tell
anyone you feel like telling.
Yeah.
You can do a shout out. A shout out to all of our friends who do listen. We love hearing from you.
Yes.
We want
feedback is good.
Feedback is always good. And tell us what you want to hear, who you'd like to hear on the show with us.
And we will try to deliver.
Yeah, that.
All of that. You can find me otherwise on Facebook and Twitter at Leonard Maltin. And I'm
LeonardMaltin.com, where a piece went up. It's, you know, when you record a show and when a show goes up different times. But today I posted a piece for you that I found absolutely fascinating. And you titled it The Unsung
Grandfather
of King Kong. That is a really, really neat piece. And it completely, it's worth reading and worth following up on.
And there's more where that came from.
Yeah.
At LeonardMaltin.com.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you all, and Jesse, we'll see you next week.
I think I'll see you in the car, but all right.
Okay, and next week.
And next week.
Bye-bye for now, everybody.
Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do. And start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.